the sun is shining and all of my favorite plant friends are popping up right now. Speaking of plants, what are you growing this year? Do you know? Do you know what kind of medicine will be in your garden? Or are you still trying to figure it out? Totally okay if you're still trying to figure it out. We're all growing and learning on this journey, right? But if you want some help, I do have a family medicine garden guide. It's basically 10 essential herbs that I feel like every mom needs to know and grow in their yard. I give you some growing tips and ways that you can use it as medicine, and it's totally free. So if you want that, I'm going to pop a link in the show notes here for you to grab it and get your hands digging in the dirt and growing incredible medicine for you and your family. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Herbalist Path. I've been off track a little bit, as I imagine many of you are today. Coronavirus has really taken our whole world for flipped upside down, whoops-a-daisy. But, you know, I think there's no more important time than now to create a movement where there's an herbalist in every home again. And that's why we're here. So today's episode, I actually recorded before this whole pandemic broke out, at least in United States awareness. It's with a wonderful woman named Alex Quitham, and she is an herbal teacher with her own school, Tend and Flourish Botanical Studies. She also teaches at Columbine School of Botanical Studies here in Oregon. She's absolutely wonderful. She really gets into the importance of connection with the earth and with nature and the plants, and how that can really help us all as individuals and throughout our entire planet. I think it's such an incredibly important message. She also talks about her grandparents, who did a wonderful job of living off the land, and that's where her beginnings of being inspired by using plants as medicine began. So we touch on quite a few herbs that really help the nervous system in dealing with stressful times. So if you're like most people that I have heard from these days, the stress levels are pretty high. So I would encourage you to tune in to this full episode, really dig in on some of the plants we talk about, and really find ways that you can deepen your connection with the earth. So thanks again for tuning into The Herbalist Path, where we're on a mission to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home again. I wish you all the most wonderful abundance, health, safety, and joy. And I challenge you to find the good in this situation right now. Anyways, thanks for listening, and I can't wait to hear you on the other end. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us on The Herbalist Path, where we're on a mission to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home again. And I'm super thrilled to bring on today's guest. Her name is Alex Quitham, and I had the great honor of meeting her this summer at Brighton Bush Herbal Conference, which was super duper cool for me. I know it's a cool experience for everybody that goes to that conference. And Alex is brilliant. She's a botanist and horticulturist and a teacher. She's worked at the Columbine School of Botanical Studies. And she now owns her own school down in the Illinois and Missouri area. And it's Tend and Flourish School of Botanicals. She's got a lot of great knowledge to share with you guys. And I'm super excited to have you on, Alex, and learn about your herbalist path. Hopefully that's a good intro for you.
Yeah, that sounded great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for all those kind things.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this movement and just, you know, helping other people learn how they can use the simple things that they have around their house to help them, or maybe the plants and friends that grow around in their neighborhoods. And I know you're really well versed in a region that is very different from the botanicals that grow up here in the Pacific Northwest. And that's part of what excites me about having you on the show today. But I'd love to hear just a little bit, if you can share with the audience about how you first got started in the world of herbalism. What made that happen?
Sure. That's a great question. I was really lucky enough to be influenced by my grandparents at an early age. They grew up, well, they were living in northern Alabama on Sand Mountain, just kind of living off the land in the middle of nowhere. And they walked miles every day and made their own herbal remedies, harvested their own plants from their backyard. And it just really stuck with me. I grew up in the suburbs of St. Louis. And although my dad always had me out in the woods, hiking and swimming and everything outdoor adventure-wise, I just connected with my grandparents, and walking through the woods and being able to have relationships with each plant, even if it's a tiny little weed, just having that connection with that plant was really profound for me. Mm-hmm. And it didn't stick with me until later, after I had moved out to the West Coast and got interested in farming and landscaping and was accumulating more medicinal plants like peppermint and chamomile and basil, lots of culinary herbs. And I started thinking, well, what, you know, how else can I incorporate this into my life? And so I got interested in attending herb school and also correlating with going to college for botany and horticulture. And I signed up for the Columbine School of Botanical Studies and went through their program. And I was also living along the Mackenzie River for almost a decade.
I love the Mackenzie.
It's so gorgeous, and my soul still resides there. It's just such a beautiful place, and I lived there through my 20s, and so I wasn't, you know, going out partying, doing things that a lot of people do in their 20s, but I was going out into the woods and hiking and finding new plant stands and connecting with the land, and that's really what influenced me to want to pursue further. Where will this take me? How can I share this with others? And it all kind of manifested from there.
That is absolutely beautiful. I love that your grandparents were so connected to the land also. And here you are, like, with a major powerful mission of connecting to the land and connecting others. That's beautiful. I always get so fascinated when I hear about our elders who just lived in this way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, like, making the movement of there being an herbalist in every home again. Like, yeah. That used to be the way, and it needs to be again. So it's so inspiring for me to hear that about your grandparents. I wonder if there was, like, one particular thing or plant that you remember them making, or a remedy or a recipe that they made that you just really sticks out?
Yeah. So my grandma loved to make tinctures. Well, so did my grandpa. Both of them made tinctures, and they would just kind of go around and find plantain. One that I don't really like to bring up necessarily, that they've been harvesting for years and years, is Monotropa uniflora, ghost pipe. Yeah. And so that's been in his medicinal chest for years, bone set. He's tons of plants. I wasn't even familiar with them when I was younger. It wasn't until I went through Columbines that I even looked at his tinctures and noticed, oh, wow, I'm familiar with these names. And but I totally detested it when I was a kid. I was like, this stuff's gross. Ugh, I can't taste this. Where's the sugar? You know?
Right.
It just stuck in my mind and memory enough that later when I was trying things, it all registered. Oh, these are great plants I can use, and they don't taste as icky as they did when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about the taste and the flavor of those medicines. Yeah. That's so cool. I wonder, where do you think they learned about those plants and how to use them? Like, to know to make the ghost pipe is...
Yeah, so I know that my grandfather had herbal teachers, and I'm not sure the names of the teachers. I had a discussion with Thomas Easley one time, and he actually knew someone. I can't remember the name of that person now, but he definitely had influential people. And I think most of it, though, was personal experience of being out walking on the land and in the woods, and then finding literature of past uses and history of those plants, and then incorporating it into their lives and see how it affected them.
That is so cool. Like, it's just beautiful, you know? We live in such a different world today, it seems.
I know, it's
and great. We're so disconnected, but to hear that they were so connected is really beautiful.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Did they do anything else, like, as a profession, or did they just pretty much live off the land and live that what is now a dream life of being a homesteader, a sustainable, you know, life?
Well, they were actually really religious. They were Seventh-day Adventist. Mm-hmm. So they had a very small community living in the middle of nowhere. And they were also farmers. So they had, you know, my grandma's gardens were gorgeous. She had okra beds that were taller than her head, and tons of corn, tons of vegetables, chickens, animals. They lived around cattle. So, you know, it's just the lifestyle that they chose to live. My grandma lived that way since she was 19 was raising my father.
That is beautiful. That's so fortunate. So it's like your first great teachers of herbalism were your own family and your grandparents. Did your parents also live that kind of lifestyle, or were they like, I'm going to rebel, and went the totally opposite way?
My dad definitely went the opposite way, and he's a nurse, so he is in the medical field, but when I mentioned I was going to a herb school, he's like, homeopathic medicine? Ugh. You know, but but now he's so much more supportive, and see, actually what I'm doing is a lot different than just a homeopathic remedy, or, you know, there's a lot of complex constituents in these plants that we're using.
Yeah.
And my, you know, my family are definitely from the St. Louis suburbs. So it was not a natural lifestyle at all growing up. It was more so just when we'd go visit, or they were here and we'd go walk through the woods. And like I did mention before, my dad is a huge outdoor activist. So we spent our weekends out in the woods too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That was really lucky for me to have that experience.
Yeah. I think that's such an incredible blessing. Like I live in the woods up on Mount Hood, and I am so grateful for that. And now as the spring's coming back, like, I go pick up my daughter after school, and I'm like, we are going somewhere beautiful, because no matter which direction I turn, I can go less than 5 miles and be in one of the more beautiful places I've ever seen. And it's such a blessing, and I feel so fortunate about that, especially, like, I just looked at an article that was talking about this, I forget the exact percentage, but it was an astronomical amount of people that just don't get outdoors at all. I'm like, great. My soul would die.
Absolutely.
Literally.
And that's what has driven me at this point, is to connect people back to the earth, because it's just made such a big impact for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you now run this great school in a region that I think is really important to have a school in. Like, we're fortunate up here in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest, there happen to be a lot of people with this like mindset of natural and holistic living, and finding an herbalist is relatively easy. But I've also lived all over the country and lived in the Southeast, and have experienced those different cultures. They're completely different. So it's really awesome that you are providing this knowledge for people in the Illinois and Missouri area. Can you tell me a little bit about your school and just what it's like and what you're offering people there?
Sure. So we just launched in the fall of 2019. So it's really fresh and new. And we're about midway point through our 6-month Herbal Foundations class. And so the Herbal Foundations course, we meet 1 to 2 times a month, and we do full Sundays. And we start out with herbal concepts. We go over all of the foundations of Western traditional herbalism, concepts like what is an astringent, what is a demulcent, what's a nervine, tonic herbs, and then we cover a lot of the Midwest native plants that fall into those categories that you can cultivate at home, or how to make the appropriate choices of purchasing in an ethical and sustainable way, and giving them resources for that. And then we do focus a lot on cultivation. So we're we're going to launch a spring and summer program in May, and that's going to be all about health in the soil, starting seeds, and then how to cultivate these medicinals in your own yard. And even if you don't have garden space, how to just do that in a pot. So right now I'm living in the city, which is the first time I've ever lived in the city before in my adult life. And it's different. I have a patio. I don't have a garden. And so I have multiple medicinal plants out on my patio that I can harvest all throughout the year. Passion flower, calendula, holy basil, rose, tons of culinary herbs. And so we're showing people that you don't have to have a huge space and how to do it with little funds so that everyone can have access to these plants, knowledge, and then what to do with them when they're grown or once you purchase the herbs. So we also teach herbal remedies and we make fun things like fire cider, elderberry syrup, tinctures, and all that good stuff.
That is awesome. You're like a superhero to me. Like, that's what it sounds like. That sounds like a really, really great program. I'm curious just because I've been in the Pacific Northwest for just over 20 years now. And, most of my plant learnings have happened while I've been out here. What are some of the plants that grow really well in your region now that are your favorite and you wish everybody in your area knew about?
Hey, I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
I love this time of year. It's spring, the sun is shining, and all of our beautiful plant friends are popping up. It's amazing. Unless, of course, you're one of the millions of people who suffer from seasonal allergies. You know, the itchy, watery eyes, the sneezing and wheezing that's straight miserable. Thankfully, there are some amazing herbs that can help you with all of that. Just like the herbs inside of Kick-Ass Allergy from Wish Garden Herbs, one of my absolute favorite herbal companies out there. Kick-Ass Allergy, yes, I said ask without the K at the end. Anyways, this formula has yerba santa, nettles, echinacea for that immune support, and orange peels, all which come together to help dry up those excessive mucosal secretions. Yep, I'm talking about the sniffles and the stuffy nose, the watery eyes, and all that jazz. This blend also acts as a great expectorant and can help ease the swelling and inflammation in those mucosal tissues. It is a top go-to for seasonal allergies. And get this, they combine all those beautiful herbs with glycerin, so it actually tastes pretty darn good. Or should I say, it tastes kick-ass, without the K at the end. Anyways, if allergy season is miserable for you and you want a natural remedy that actually works for those itchy eyes and being all sneezy and wheezy, you have got to check out Wish Garden Herbs Kick-Ass Allergy. And for those of you with the little kiddos, no sweat, they've got a kick-it allergy too. And you pregnant mamas, you don't have to suffer either. They've got a kick-ass allergy formula just for you. So head over to wishgardenherbs.com or check out the link in the show notes and go grab yourself some kick-ass allergy so you can enjoy spring again.
Sure. So I really love passion flower. I mentioned that. That's a Missouri native, Passiflora incarnata. It's a vining plant. So I said, I have this tiny little patio and it has a balcony. And so I plant that in a 5-gallon pot and I just trellis it all along my balcony and down, and it floats down to the neighbor's house below me. And I just can harvest the flowers all throughout the season. And then at the end of the year, once they're kind of starting to die back, I just cut all of the leaves and stems and tincture them or dry them for teas, or sometimes I'll make bath salts with them, nice relaxing bath salt blend. And I just think it's a really great calming herb. You know, we're stressed out a lot.
Absolutely.
We're overwhelmed. There's a lot going on. A lot of people have trouble falling asleep at night, or we just got a lot going on. And mm-hmm. so passion flower is a great, easy one to grow in this region. It also grows great in Oregon, depending on the variety.
Right. And that's so cool. I didn't realize it was native there. What a beautiful plant to have as a native too, you know?
I know. It's so
make neat. All of your neighbors just like, wow.
They definitely doing? Comment on it. They're like, your like patio is the nicest on the block.
Aw, that's wonderful. Yeah. What else is out there that you can surprise and delight? Oh.
Goldenrod, that's a great one. It's going to be great for allergies. It's a diuretic, good for urinary tract infections. New England asters, great asteraceous plant, great for allergies as well. Milky oats can be grown here. I really advocate that plant because, once again, it's a tonic herb, calming. It's also really great for regenerating soil. It's a bioaccumulator. Mm-hmm. So in permaculture, it's what they call a chop and drop. So you can plant this as a cover crop and be giving nutrients back into your soil. And then you can also harvest it when it gets to that really nice milky sap stage, that, you know, 3 days to a week long period that happens. Mm-hmm. You can harvest that and make a really nice tincture, fresh tincture, and have that for your nourishing, nerving aspect. And then you can chop and drop all of the rest, or you can harvest it and dry it for oat straw and make really nutrient-rich infusions. And yeah. So I just really love milky oats. I think it's a great plant for not only bringing back the health of the earth and the soil, but also for ourselves too.
Absolutely, like nutritive. For as it goes down and as it goes up, it's really a cool plant too. I love it. Absolutely. So were there any other teachers that were incredibly influential in your early days of herbalism? I mean, it sounds like the grandparents were really powerful, but I just want to see if there was anybody else that made you look in that way.
I think one of my most influential moments was in my early 20s. I was in Redding, California. I had worked up there and I was there for a few months, and I went to a farmer's market and met Ted Dawson of the Mountain Wintu Herbs. He's located in Shingleton, California, and has been teaching herbs for many, many years. And I remember just kind of hanging out there for a long time and picking his brain. And he gave us samples of fire cider and a couple of other remedies. And I bought a fire cider and took it home, and I was hooked. And that was really influential to me. And then by the time that I had moved up to Eugene, there's the Free Herbalism Project, which is an amazing opportunity for anyone in that region to go to. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to see Howie and Steven of Columbine's Botanical Studies just lighting up the room with their goofiness and their knowledge.
They've definitely got the goofy going on. Yeah. I love it.
And then I also saw Sue Ciralupe, and she talked a lot about her work with Occupy Medical. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away. She inspired me so much. And then I ended up attending Columbine School. So not only were here Stephen and Howie my teachers, but Heron Bray. And Heron Bray is just an amazing wild food botanist. And she holds such reverence for the earth and wild food tending. And that also really inspired me too. Oh, so those were my earlier teachers and people that inspired me.
Yeah, they're all incredible teachers. I haven't learned with Heron. I haven't taken a class with Sue Ciralupe, but I've had the great fortune of being in her presence and company, which is really, really wonderful. And I have gotten to learn from both Stephen and Howie, but I've always wanted to go to the Columbine School just because I know there's so much field work and so much botany. And I really love getting outside and connecting with the plants and learning about them in great depth by being in their presence and their space. But due to life circumstances, I was never really able to get down there. Not to say that I couldn't again in the future.
Yeah, you never know.
Right. What to you, I mean, these are all amazing teachers, but are there some key things that now that you've learned from so many different herbalists, some key things that you look for in an ideal teacher as you go on, assuming that you love to continue learning about herbalism like I do?
Oh, I think it's a never-ending learning process.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah, in this field, things constantly change. Even with botany, science, anything in science is constantly changing. But going back, what was the question you asked?
So what traits do you find makes a really incredible herb teacher? Let's bring it back to key traits that you think would make for a great herb teacher to somebody that's just stepping into this world.
I think being relatable is really important, and not necessarily having the strongest vocabulary and the most terminology, but being able to bring it down to a level that everyone can understand, no matter what background you're from, no matter how much money you have or any of those kind of things, that it should be available for everyone.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of an interesting aspect to herbalism, as well as getting more diversity within this community. So I think diversity is also really good, and personal experience. You can go to school and read all the books and take all the tests, but did you actually use that information and put it to real life experience? And so I think that's also really important. One thing that I really respect about Howie is how many years he's spent building up his clinic and tending his plant stands. He's been going back to the same plant stands for nearly 4 decades. So he's watched evolution happen and watched how the plants have changed, whether they like certain harvesting aspects or whether they just need to be left alone. So I really think personal experience is very important for a teacher, and then making it available for everyone.
That's beautiful. I love that Howie's been back there to those same spaces for 40 years.
It's insane.
I'm 41.
Yeah, exactly. So
impressive, for sure. And I love how you talk about the personal experience piece on how, like, yeah, you can build up all the books you want and read all about the things and watch all the videos, but until you actually do it, you're not really you're not going to grasp it, and you're not going to truly know. Like, I went to school for experiential ed way back when. So that's a really key piece for me. And I think it is for everybody. It's a challenging piece I'm learning now as a business owner as well. Like, that's not the easiest thing. Like, I got into this because I love plants and people, not because I love crunching numbers and learning business, but that's obviously a really important factor.
Oh, the fun aspect that people don't realize, that we're behind a computer a huge amount of time crunching numbers.
And that's where we're really lucky. We get to go to the plants, and we have friends like Milky Oats and friends like Passion Flower to help us along that journey, I think. So I want to go back quickly to those great plants. I was so excited to hear what grows well in your region that you're in right now. And talk about the passion flower, the goldenrod, the milky oats. And can you just tell me about goldenrod? I remember when I was a little girl, I grew up in Nebraska. So goldenrod was a huge thing around there. And I remember doing did you ever do the light sensitive kind of plant imprints on paper? I can't remember.
Oh no, I've recently saw something about that. Yeah.
I think I was in like second grade, and our big project was to learn about goldenrod, and we got to do those. So that project has always stuck in my mind, though it had nothing to do with the medicinal benefits. How can people use goldenrod, and in what format and what for?
Well, you can use it as a tincture, as a tea. I would say most of my history with it is using it as a tincture. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I've just moved back to this region, so I'm also just kind of gaining personal experience with some of these plants, including goldenrod. Mm-hmm. And the only time that I've really used it is as a diuretic, for a UTI coming on. And it is a little bit aromatic. And those are really the key components that I've used it for. But mm-hmm. other than that, it's a new plant for me.
Right.
Yeah.
So you haven't used it much. I've heard about people using it for allergies as well.
Yes, it is on the allergy list, but I haven't used it for that reason. So I really can't justify its use for that or not.
Definitely respect that. Yeah. For sure. So those plants, I'm so excited that they're there, and just to talk to somebody that's not in the Pacific Northwest. So, I mean, yeah. I know you learned a lot here.
Yeah. The plants are very different here. One of the biggest aspects that I love are the prairies. And so there's a lot of like bee balm, mountain mint. There's gorgeous like rattlesnake master. That's a new plant for me, which there are medicinal uses, but I haven't used it myself yet. And so I'm kind of right now at the point where I'm botanically learning about these plants and their ecosystems. I just started volunteering at the Litzinger Ecology Center in St. Louis, which is a great resource for local schools. It's a free field trip, 36 acres of restored prairie, and then a woodland area and riparian zone, and it's all kids that go in there. And so right now I'm kind of learning all these new ecosystems that I'm not familiar with, because the basis of my knowledge was from the Pacific Northwest. I took botany classes and horticulture classes out there, and all of my training through Columbines was in the Pacific Northwest. So I'm much more familiar with those plants. Mm-hmm. And just moving out here about a year ago, however, I'm still out in the Northwest almost half of the year.
Right.
It's kind of stepping back and literally starting these relationships from ground zero.
That's exciting.
It is. It's like super exciting. And it's really amazing that when you have these foundational concepts and botany terminology and plant identification skills, they translate really well all over the region. It just gives you a foot in the door of learning these new plants wherever you go. Or when you're using like a dichotomous key to ID plants, it's these characteristics are going to shine from what you've learned before. And so it gets you to that point that you need to be a little bit faster. So like I mentioned, like with New England aster and goldenrod, passion flower I've been using for a long period of time, so that's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But those are plants that I'm new to. And tulip poplar tree is something that I just started harvesting last year and making products and just trying them. And so I still don't necessarily have personal experience of being able to share how those affect me necessarily. Mm-hmm. Besides like with goldenrod, I used it for a UTI. That's an experience that I know. But right now I'm kind of just looking at them in the winter and seeing what the prairies look like when everything's dormant for the winter and what's going to pop up first. And once we start harvesting these plants, how is it going to affect it in the prairies and the woodlands? And it's really neat to kind of start fresh in a way.
Yeah, that sounds neat. And I can totally envision you with this really wonderful school where you've touched so many people. And 40 years from now, people are going to say, my teacher has been to these stands for 40 years. And she has been watching how these plants have grown and adapted to what's going on on our planet right now. So,
and I'm also really lucky, my business partner that is a primary instructor with the school with me. She's a permaculture teacher, an author of 3 books now, and has been a farmer. So she's been growing these medicinal plants for 20 years, and she has a lot of personal experience with them. So she definitely helps. You know, I've got the concepts down and talking about plant families and botany terminology. And she really has the personal experience with the Midwest native plants. And so it's really great to not only be learning with her, but also finding more complex relationships with these new plants based on my previous knowledge.
That's so exciting. It makes me just really want to get out and travel and move somewhere just so I can find new plant friends, you know, and form that relationship and learn so much more. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, plants are really complex. It's easy. You know, we can look up all of their uses. You know, it can say, oh, it's aromatic. It's this and that, but it affects everyone differently, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think really, or if you have a clinic and you're sharing this medicine with people and you see how it affects others, that's also a really big, big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is. So now that you're getting to know all of these friends and you have all of these friends that you've known for a while, when I say friends, I mean plants. Oh. What, if you could just pick one herb that you wish that everybody knew about, what would you pick?
Well, I had
It's a tough one.
About milky. Well, I thought about milky oats because, but since we talked about it earlier, I'm going to go with my personal fave that I feel like made the biggest difference in my life. And that would be skullcap, the Scutellaria species. And I think you can tell I love calming herbs.
Right.
Kind of a, I wake up ready for the day, shooting out of bed, my brain's going a mile a minute. And I tend to be a little bit more of a stressed out person. And so for calming herbs, like a skullcap is a tonic herb that you can take every day, you know, the 1 to 2 dropperfuls or a couple of cups of tea. I prefer a fresh tincture. There's something about fresh plant medicine that's full of all those great constituents, but you can take it plenty of other ways. I like to make skullcap syrup, but I think skullcap is just nourishing. And we carry a lot of stress in our shoulders, our muscles, we're tense, and skullcap just releases that. It's like a fresh breath of air. And it's bitter, so it's also really great for digestion, which a lot of people have troubles with digestion. Mm-hmm. So I think the bitter aspect, the tonic, nerving, calming aspect to this plant is just really special to me. And I think that it's a great plant that everyone can have in their medicinal apothecary or personal medicinal chest.
Yeah, I too love skullcap. It's I have a fun story of my herbal beginnings and learning about skullcap. I had done an apprenticeship about 10 years ago at the herb shop in Portland when Dr. J.J. Purcell was running it. And my woman I worked with there was named Caitlin, who now owns an herb shop in Bend, which I made that connection, actually, fortunately, while I was at Brighton Bush this summer. Oh. And I loved showing up to do my apprenticeship work, and Caitlin was a very energetic, bubbly woman, and she would say, I just love skullcap. It just goes straight to my head. And like a year or so later, I was in herb school, and we had to do a plant monograph about all these different plants, and well, you know, pick our plant and sit with it and be with it. And I was in my backyard, and it was a sunny, beautiful day, and I chose skullcap for this time around. And I'm like, great, skullcap just goes right to your head. It's just going to make me brilliant. And I gather all my books and I grab some tea and some tincture, and I've got some of the plant with me, and I'm just like, all right, I'm going to hang out and I'm going to write this monograph and it's going to be great. I'm just going to take this skullcap tincture. And I take the tincture and I'm just like, oh, it's a pretty day. I don't really feel like writing. Maybe I need to take more of this skullcap so it really goes to my head and just makes me smart to write this monograph. And I take 4 skullcap and then I'm just like, oh, yeah. I'm just so relaxed. It just feels so good in this backyard right now. And so I'm like, well, I just don't really want to write right now. And so I pick up the books and I start reading a little more. And I'm like, oh, Skullcap is really a sedating, nerving. It's very relaxing. And I'm just, that's one of my favorite stories of when I was first starting to really dig into herbalism and Skullcap.
So you found a powerful ally.
Yeah, absolutely. It was that you really got to listen to the plants sometimes more than when you hear a person talk about things too.
Yeah,
that goes back to that like personal experiences thing and, an interpretation of words. You know, we can misinterpret them even just by somebody speaking or reading or what you're finding on the internet.
Oh yeah. And sometimes I'll notice too, even when I'm a student or my students, they'll, you know, be kind of spacing out and they write down a line, but they leave out a part of like the last part of the line. And so that statement becomes completely irrelevant to what it originally was.
Completely.
And then you get that write up in the magazine and it's that one quote that wasn't correctly, you know,
like,
written down.
That wasn't me. That's not what I meant. I'm sure if Kate hears this, which reminds me, I should probably reach out to her to get her on this podcast. But if she hears it, she'll probably be like, no, that's not what I was talking about, though clearly I know that now. Yeah. Funny experience.
But that's what you took away.
Yeah, Skullcap, a great one. Great for those that deal with a lot of anxiety and stress. And I also love it in teas. I have it in a couple of my tea formulas. When I was pregnant with my daughter, oftentimes women in later stages of pregnancy have a really hard time with sleeping. It was what helped me sleep so well in pregnancy. Right. So that was really nice. I love that recommendation. And you were going to say something, but I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say calming herbs. Yeah, it's just one of those nervines in general with the calming aspect. You just have to take it person to person, because for Skullcap, I could take it all day and take 4 dropperfuls and be fine, but someone else could take half a dropperful and it could put them right out, right down to sleep. So
basically like it did with me when I was
exactly.
1 dropperful. Yay. I'm in a dreamy state right now. It was really lovely. I definitely have a lot of stress now in my life, but I never really did. And I've always been really fortunate that I handle stress pretty well. So that really goes to show a lot of the constitutional differences in people and how that really plays a big, huge role in how to use plants and herbs with each unique individual. And I think what I have seen from a lot of people, like a lot of people in my community come to me for help or what have you, and then they're like, well, I went on the internet and it said take this, and I'm like, plants don't work that way.
you are different than that person.
I know, internet herbalism, it's almost, I mean, yes, there's great information out there, but there is
now more than ever.
Even there's a lot of misinformation.
Yeah.
What do you have anything to say to that whole little session on how herbs are different for people? And
yeah, so I would say one of the most common questions that I get out at events are, you know, oh, I have this like rash, or I have, you know, my baby has this going on, or my kid, and what can I do for this? And I always tell everyone, I can't make a judgment by just meeting you and having even just a couple of minutes of background. As herbalist's job is to really get the whole picture. And so with even suggesting herbs, I really am very conservative about it. And generally I'll do very mild herbs or even culinary herbs that have medicinal uses that are just safe options, because it's never okay to suggest an herb and that could hurt someone, I would never feel okay. And that's very frowned upon for our careers. I'm very careful with even suggesting herbs for people. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't like to do it if someone comes up and I don't know them or their past history or anything in that way.
Yeah, I think that's a really important piece. Like my background and my training are definitely in clinical herbalism and how to work with people, but I just chose a different path at this point in time where I'm not working with people. Yet people know me as the herbalist in my community and try and come to me, and I just have to refer them to somebody else. Like, I don't have the time at this point in my life to sit and give you a proper herbal consultation and dig into what's really going on with you. And I don't have an instant fix pill for you.
Exactly. That's what they know. It's the, we all want an instant fix, and that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
And these herbs are so complex and have so many aspects to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if there were a great herbal recipe, if you were talking to a beginning herbalist or somebody in your school, maybe, what would you say would be a great recipe to start with and really spark their desire to learn more about these plants?
Yeah. Well, an herbal tea blend is always fun and easy, but I really think also just showing them how to make a cold water extraction or a hot water extraction. Mm-hmm. I really feel like I love marshmallow root.
Me too.
And demulcents, you know, a lot of people have stomach issues. Our digestive systems are just in bad states in America. We don't have very good diets, generally, not all the time. And so there's a lot of acid reflux. And I really think that making a cold water extraction, nice slimy coating, demulcent herb like marshmallow root is really good for most people. It's going to be soothing and protective to the digestive system. Super easy. Anyone can make that at home. You just need a jar and some herb and water. And that is, just like I said, accessible to everyone to make a cold water extraction. And then I think tinctures are just fun. People love making tinctures, of course. And one of the ones that I really like to start with is talking about the digestive system and making a good bitter formula or just a single herb tincture. Mm-hmm. And the fun one we did this semester was cacao with dandelion root and chocolate mint.
Yum.
It was so yummy. And everyone loved it. They were just so excited about it. And you know, if they're excited about it and will bring it with them wherever they go, to their buffet or their potluck or McDonald's, wherever it is that they're going, and they feel the desire to bring that with them, then I think that's a good remedy to start with.
Absolutely. So you talked about bitter formulas for digestion. What does that mean?
Well, bitter is going to stimulate all those great digestive juices, and it's just going to get the timing right. Sometimes our timing's off. We go on trips. We are stressed out. We eat a lot of random food combinations, and bitters are just going to ease that process. It's going to stimulate all the right juices at the right time. If you're bloated or gassy, it's going to help relieve those symptoms as well. I think it's just, and it's also just going to help stimulate your appetite. For me, there were years where I couldn't wake up and eat breakfast. I'd wait until the afternoon, and then I'd be so hungry by that time that I'd eat this big old meal, and it was causing health issues over time to do that for so long in my life. And so to just take a few drops of a bitter and stimulate my digestion and actually get hungry earlier so that before I go out in the field all day, I can actually eat. And I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely does. It's a great piece that the best recipes for a beginner are ones that are going to make them excited to use more. I wanted to touch base back on the marshmallow root and the cold infusion. I also love marshmallow roots. One, I'd love to hear exactly how to make the cold infusion. You talked about a jar and the root and the water. Sure. Can you just tell our listeners how to the whole process. Like if you were to do it right now, how much would you use? And
of course. So I would get a quart mason jar with a clean, that's clean with a dry and matching lid. And then I would use about an ounce of the herb, depending on how slimy you want it. Go ahead and start out with an ounce of herb. Then you just fill it up with water. I like to let it sit overnight, and then I can strain it out in the morning and drink that in the morning. You can do it in the morning too. Just let it sit for at least, you know, 3-4 hours to get that nice sliminess going. And if you want it more slimy, then you just add a little more marshmallow root, more than an ounce. And as you pour out the marshmallow root at the end there, you'll kind of see that nice slime. That's the good stuff, the nice coating, protective, going to stimulate the mucous membranes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun one to watch happen. A quick question on that. You said an ounce, and I think that for me, like going from being a folk herbalist to actually having formulas I've got to use and be very consistent with my product business, ounces get confusing. Are you talking about a weighed ounce, or are you talking about a measured ounce in the measuring cup?
A weighed ounce.
Okay.
But honestly, I don't usually measure. I just kind of pour it in. At this point in my career, it's kind of just like, oh, let's put a little bit more in there. All right, that's good.
Absolutely.
It's hard to give measurements, but I just say an ounce per quart jar.
Yeah, I'm very much a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know,
Exactly.
but that's how I used to do things for so long. But now that I actually have a product line, I have to be pretty consistent and very,
I know, and teaching, they definitely want the recipe to be exact. And as a beginning, when you start out with herbalism, or maybe it was just me, I was very concerned about following the exact recipe for everything. I didn't want to mess it up. And now, you know, now I'm just like, oh, let's do a little bit of this. And you kind of just get a feel for it. You see, you just personal experience, you understand it. Yeah,
totally. And then back on that slime, I just wanted to go when you were first talking about marshmallow root cold infusion, you said a fancy word that I love. And I think that part of learning about herbalism is basically learning the language. And you said demulcent. And I just wanted to touch base on like exactly what a demulcent is, even though you've kind of gotten to it, but let's get specific and say, hey, this is what it means when you hear the word demulcent.
Yeah, so demulcent is going to be soothing to mucous membranes. It's protective, it's coating, great for the digestive system, urinary tract system, reproductive system, lungs, all the above.
Yeah, I feel like I have a friend who's been talking about how ashy his legs are. He's African American, and I'm like, ooh, just slather yourself in some marshmallow root slime, you know, or seaweed slime, something like that. Could be nice, but I love the good demulcents, and I'm recovering from a dry, raspy, irritated throat, so definitely got
That's one thing here, moving to the Midwest in the winter. I'm used to living in a rainforest where it's wet in the Cascades, and here it's cold, bitterly cold and super dry, and we have the heat blasting all the time, and my skin is same thing, like so dry, everything's dry, my eyes, my throat. And so demulcents and making these marshmallow cold water extractions have really made a difference being in this new region.
I bet that's a huge piece. So I think the word herbalist is tossed around a lot, and clarity in what that means is, you know, all over the board. I don't know if clarity is really there, but in your opinion, what's it mean to be an herbalist? What makes somebody an herbalist?
This was a question that I struggled a lot with in the beginning, and I really didn't know when to call myself an herbalist. I think it took me a lot longer to accept it. I was teacher training at that point in time where I was like, you know what, I think it's time that I can say I'm an herbalist. But it's definitely a personal decision. And I think it also has to do a lot with your confidence level, because you can go to school and for whatever aspect, clinical herbalism, just the foundational herbalism, more conservation herbalism of actually being outside and working with the plants. But after you start gaining that personal experience and using the plants and seeing how it affects other people is kind of when you start becoming an herbalist yourself. And I really think it's a personal choice. It's hard to say because you can't say, oh, after 4 years of school, you've made it. Well, certain schools all teach different things. Certain schools don't even have an attendancy policy. And so, sure, you could have got that certificate, but how much did you actually show up to that class? Mm-hmm. And so I think it really has to do with when you're comfortable and confident and have all of the foundations, but then also have used these plants and are able to use personal experience of sharing that with others. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really tough question, because you can look at the AHG, the American Herbalist Guild, and see all the requirements of what it takes to be a registered herbalist. You have to know the constituents and use all the virtues of over 150 different plants, and you know, have to have a certain amount of clinical hours. And but if you're not going to be working in a clinical aspect, then it might not take as long for you to become an herbalist mm-hmm. in that way. So I think it really is a personal journey for everyone. Mm-hmm. Some people grew up with herbs, and some people, they just like have been living with herbs and using them and sharing them with people because that's who they are and it's just a part of them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really difficult question, and I don't even know if I have an answer for you. Yeah. But I think it really relies with ourselves and how comfortable you are with putting someone else's health on the line. And you have the ability to strengthen someone or hurt someone. So you have to make that decision when you're ready to cross that boundary.
Absolutely. I chose this question because I knew it was a really, really challenging one. And I believe that there are herbalists come in all shapes and sizes. So that's not necessarily somebody that's going to be teaching or being in that clinical setting. Maybe it's just the mom at home who makes remedies for her child and her family to keep them well. Or maybe it's the farmer down the road that's just growing mm-hmm. the herbs. And, you know, it definitely comes in all shapes and sizes. But I, too, struggled with the like, well, when can I say I'm herbalist? You know, what does that even mean? And here I am. I'm a medicine maker, and I like to teach. And as I said, I'm trained as a clinical herbalist, but I don't practice that way. Do I know how to? Yeah, I might, you know. Mm-hmm. I probably need to practice a little bit more and to really feel confident saying that, yeah, I'm there. But yeah, it's a tough question, and it's deep.
You know? It is. It's very deep.
You had a great answer for it. If you could, would you do anything different in starting your path down the herbalist way?
Yeah, I think that I would have just tried. I wish I would have started earlier.
Nice.
But we all come into it at the right time. Totally. It's, you know, it's, I definitely wish when the first thoughts that I had, oh, I would like to attend an herb school, I wish I would have pursued that. But all of the experiences that led me up to that point helped me through herb school of, you know, getting in there and taking botany classes and just living out in the woods for almost a decade and actually being a part of the ecosystem changed mm-hmm. how I use the plants later.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. If there were one book that you would recommend to somebody who's like listening to this podcast and are like, man, I want to learn more about herbs and how to use them as medicine, what would you recommend?
Well, my favorite book that I used was Medicinal Plants of the Pacific Northwest by Michael Moore. I think that book, and he has multiple other books, the Southwest and Rocky Mountains. So if you live in those regions, I would 100% recommend that you have one of those books in your bookshelf, on your bookshelf. However, if you're not from the West Coast or the Southwest, then I really like A Modern Herbal by Maud Grieve. I just think that there's a lot of information, and it's also a lot of historical information. And her writing style is really lighthearted and has some humor to it. So I think it's relatable, and it's a two-volume series, and it puts all the herbs alphabetically. So it's just a nice resource.
Awesome. Yeah, those are great recommendations. I've got them all. It's hard to narrow it down just to one book.
I know. I'm kind of a book addict.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard to choose one.
I have toned down my book purchasing addiction, maybe.
Yeah.
But I definitely have a well stocked couple of bookshelves filled with herb books. Mm-hmm. And there's so that it goes back to that, like, yeah, you can have all those books, but unless you're using the plants, those books are just thick money.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? You've really shared a lot of super awesome information today, and it's been really fun getting to know you more. Do you have any other advice or wisdom you would share with somebody just beginning down their herbalist path?
I think one of the most important aspects is getting to know the plants in their natural habitats. And not all of the plants we can have that experience with, because they grow in different regions or different countries. However, I think it's really important to establish a connection with your local area, either the land you live on or parks. Get out there and see the ecosystems and connect with the earth, because I think that's what we need right now more than ever, is seeing how the plants take care of us and how we need to take care of them too. It needs to be a symbiotic relationship. And so I think just getting to know each plant and being out there really creates a personal relationship. And I think it's important. And sure, we can go to an herb store or order things online, since that's very popular, but to actually be in the presence of the plants is not only going to enlighten your spirit and just emotionally uplift you, but it's also going to uplift the plants and the earth, and they take care of us. And so I think that that's really important.
Amen. You just have me smiling so big as you're saying all of that, and my skin and my heart and my soul are just beaming with, like, yes, what she said. Connect with the earth and let the plants take care of us and also take care of them. It's a huge piece of, like, my entire mission behind being an herbalist. I really deeply want to inspire people to take better care of the planet through taking better care of themselves with using plants as medicine. It's so important. Like, I've got this true deep belief that if people were connected more to recognizing that these plants are here to heal us, they'll take more steps to help heal them.
And that's my life goal.
Me too. Let's do it. Heck yeah. That's a really great reason right there. But I still want to ask you, what's the greatest reason that you think there should be an herbalist in every home?
Well, we, as a whole, there's a lot of unhealthiness surrounding us. A lot of people have gaps in the health system. They're unhappy. They're unhealthy, and we have a lot of misinformation given to us. And so I think it's really important to have someone in the community or in each home that's connected with this natural relationship and traditional ways of living and health that can be incorporated into our lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's great. And it's so easy. Is there anything else you'd like for people just beginning on their herbalist path, or anything else you'd like to add to this whole conversation?
Get out there, get in the woods, try the plants, be safe about it, and share what your experiences and what you know, and inspire everyone. It's a ripple effect. We need to get out there and create those ripples and just get everyone excited about it. It could be as simple as, hey, look at this violet flower. It's edible, or I can put this in apple cider vinegar and make a salad dressing out of it, and everyone thinks it's the coolest thing ever, you know? Just inspire them whatever way you can.
Heck yes. I love that. I love you now. Like, this is the most in-depth our conversations have been. And it's been really, really fun listening to you and your story and sharing this, and how far back it's gone in your ancestry is just really amazing, and so beautiful to see you out there inspiring others to make these differences in their lives and the lives of our planet altogether. I think that's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to learn more from you or connect with you? How can people do that?
Sure. Tendon Flourish. We've got www.tendandflourish.com. That's our website. You can sign up and follow our events. And then also, if you're out in the Pacific Northwest, there's the Columbine School of Botanical Studies, and that's www.botanicalstudies.net. And we are still filling up our spring apprenticeship. We have a couple of spots available. So if you want to get out into the woods with us, call now.
Awesome. Are you on any social media platforms that people could follow you on?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Tending the Wild Botanicals. Mm-hmm. And then Tendon Flourish is on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Awesome. Yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Heck yeah. I hope everybody reaches out to you and at least follows you on social media if they can't come to your school in the Pacific Northwest or in the Illinois, Missouri area.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
Wow. I just really loved that episode with Alex, and when I go through and edit it and listen to it again, it brings such a smile to my face, just the connection I got to have with her and getting to chat about the importance of the connection with nature and the earth and the plants, and how that's the best way for us all to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home again. So I really hope you follow Alex at Tend and Flourish Botanical School. Definitely tune into Columbine School of Botanical Studies. That's a school I've wanted to go to for quite a while, but due to varying life circumstances, I couldn't. Anyways, yeah, I hope you dug that episode as much as I did. And I want to thank you for listening to The Herbalist Path again. And if you want, I'd love to offer you a 20% discount at Mountain Mel's. If you just use the code The Herbalist Path as you check out, there will be a 20% discount for you. I really appreciate you tuning in. And I really hope that you get outside and you get a little time to connect with nature during these challenging days. Take care of yourself, take care of your loved ones, take care of the earth. Peace.
Hey, I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
Medicinal mushrooms are all the rage these days, if you didn't know already. And with great reason, because they are powerful medicine that can improve your health and your life in so many different ways, when they're well made. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of stuff on the market that isn't going to be so effective. And that's why you need to find a brand that you can actually trust. For me, that brand is Whole Sun Wellness. And this is the creation of a brilliant woman and fellow mama, Jamie Bonfiglio. She's an international mushroom educator that has been working in the medicinal mushroom industry for years. And this is when she saw firsthand how many other companies take shortcuts when it comes to their products. And Jamie wasn't having it. She set out to build her company the right way. Whole Sun Wellness is here to raise the industry standards so those crap mushrooms on the market aren't getting into your body or your family's body. Whole Sun Wellness is the first company to test and report nutritional facts for all of their extracts. They go beyond industry standards every step of the way, from sourcing to extraction and final testing. And as the owners of the largest medicinal mushroom farm in the United States, Whole Sun Wellness is taking control of their supply chain for the highest quality and absolute full transparency. They're even the first company to include pure mycelium extract in every single product. So when you're thinking of getting medicinal mushrooms for you and your family, Whole Sun Wellness is exactly the ones you want. Also, be sure to check out their new Mycolites. These are the world's first dissolvable electrolyte tablets. They're featuring functional mushroom extracts that'll give you more energy, more stamina, and recovery as well. And who couldn't use all of that? The other thing is, they are these adorable little mushroom-shaped tablets, and they come in like a little Altoids box, but way cooler than Altoids, because they're Mycolites. Anyways, head to wholesunwellness.com to grab yourself some Mycolites and all of the other functional medicinal mushrooms that you and your family need. And of course, you can grab that link right here in the show notes now.